The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 235 for 11110. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I am Dave Hamilton here in Durham, New Hampshire. Sitting next to me,
Pilot Pete. Hey, there everybody. He is.
And of course, it wouldn't be the Mac Geek Gab if we didn't have
John F. Braun here in Fairfield, Connecticut. And I couldn't help but notice, Dave, but the date 11110.
Yeah, just to be clear, it's 2010. This isn't the 1910 show.
Yeah. So if you put the 2-0 in there, then it messes it up. But if you just say 11110, that is binary. I believe it's 30.
Yes, it's not actually a binary representation of the date, but the date contains the digits that are only available in binary numbers.
And it would come out to 30 in base 10. Anyways, if you're a computer science student, maybe you. Yeah, otherwise, you just have no idea what we're talking about. And we should just dive right in, Dave. You know what we have, Dave? I'm looking here, and I think I see what we have, unless you have something else. But I think we have CES, which you were just at.
I was.
We're going to talk about Snow Leopard printing.
Yeah.
Of course, always the cool stuff found, sharing a computer, and a few other little tidbits that I have, and just, calculator. It's all over the place, man.
It's a full show, and there's no way we're going to get to all of it, which is just fine, because that means we'll do more. So I did just return from CES. I was there very briefly.
CES being?
Ah, yes, the Consumer Electronics Show, an annual event that happens out in Las Vegas, usually this time of year. It usually sits right on top of Macworld Expo, so I often don't have the opportunity to go.
For years and years. And the audience, is this for individuals or press, or what's the target audience here?
Yeah, so the official target audience is press and industry buyers and that sort of thing. The idea is people show up with their consumer electronics, right? Anything that would be sold to people like you and me and the general populace. But it's not for the general populace to come and see their stuff. It's for the media to come and see it and report, or people like, you know, the folks who stock the shelves for Best Buy, right, will show up and say, maybe we want to get this product and put it on our shelves, or, you know, Target or whoever, right? I mean, all those people are there. So that's essentially what it's for. Now, it's not that difficult to get tickets. They let me in.
I know.
But you know, there you do definitely see some of the general consumers that are going to hack it up and have some fun. And that's fine,
sure,
too. It's a huge show. The last time I went, believe it or not, was before the Las Vegas Convention Center opened. So it was in like five different halls all over the city. It was before the monorail existed.
It was a
real nightmare to get around. Now it's in essentially all in the Las Vegas Convention Center. But that's huge. I mean, it's two halls in the south, one in the center.
We got very lost.
Yeah.
World. We didn't realize how amazingly huge that convention center is.
After CES, I now understand completely how to navigate that convention center, because if I didn't learn, I would have been lost all week. But but, you know, it's pretty big. They actually released an iPhone app that worked out really well. I went in ahead of time and checked off all the exhibitors that I wanted to see, that I needed to meet with or wanted to check out their products or whatever. And then it synced that down to my iPhone, and I could pull up a map of the convention hall floor, and it would show me, it would highlight in yellow which exhibitors I had already selected. Now, it also was supposed to try and show me where I was. I never got that to work. There was some location thing that it was going to use with Wi-Fi.
GPS indoors.
No, it wasn't GPS. It was triangulating with Wi-Fi, or so I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, sure. Like they do in the iFi card.
Yeah, that, exactly.
Who is that? But yeah, so you could do location with Wi-Fi. It's not always the greatest, though.
Right. It that didn't work. But still, it was totally fine, because I wasn't there to see everyone. And it really made it efficient.
See everyone.
No.
If this is like Comdex, I remember I went to a Comdex show
it's
once.
It's bigger, I think.
You said it's in that convention center is huge. And I think in the past they've had it in multiple hotels.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So,
all right. So you got to dive into what caught your eye.
I'll talk about. Yeah. The, so The first thing I want to talk about was I went and saw the Microsoft keynote on Wednesday night. So they call it the pre-show keynote. Now, you know, here's the thing. Being, you know, Mac people, John, you and I have seen countless Steve Jobs keynotes. And that does set the bar very high. Not only does Apple have, you know, cool products, not only do they have a team of people that work very, very hard at scripting and choreographing the whole thing, they have a master marketer and showman out there to deliver, right? So
sure, and the RDF emitter works.
That's right.
I got to say, always is more often than not, yeah, pretty much when Steve's done it, you get this kind of warm glow and you feel like you're part of the family. Seriously.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
He's a great showman and everything typically works very smoothly. Then.
Yeah. So, you know, we get to this Ballmer thing and I knew going in that, you know, the bar in my head that was set was unattainable by, you know, I mean, it just, that's just reality. And that's fine. I've seen other keynotes by other people. It's fine. So I show up. They dim the lights at, you know, it's supposed to start at 6:30, I think. They dim the lights at 6:35. And not only do the house lights go out, but there were, you know, a dozen computers on stage and a big screen behind the stage. All that goes dark. All the computers, or maybe not all of them, but most of them. And so we spent the next 25 plus minutes while they rebooted the computers and, you know, figured out which circuit breaker to turn back on. You know, and you could see from where we were in the crowd, you could see, you know, the computers, most of them were stuck at that, you know, Windows XP. Should I boot into safe mode screen? Right. You know, I was shut down improperly. What should I do now? And so there were people scurrying around the stage.
OK, I've done enough work in the big boy corporate world to learn one thing before a presentation. Mm-hmm. Do a dry run.
Yeah.
To me, it sounds like either somebody was screwing around with something or they just threw it all together and figured that it would just run swimmingly tomorrow morning.
Good luck. Well, it wasn't. It was at night. I mean, they could have, you know.
I'm sorry. So they maybe threw it together in the morning and figured, hey, you know. So I don't know if it was. Yeah. Anyways, go on.
So they should have had all these things on battery backup units because one of the things actually blew up. They were going to demo this TV and they couldn't because it actually had blown up when they killed the power. But anyway, you know, that aside, it started late. You know, Ballmer is his own kind of showman. He's sort of like your goofy old oafy uncle, right? I mean, the guy has his own style of charisma, and he's semi entertaining. He's very, you know, very self deprecating, but clearly a smart guy and very passionate about what he does. So, you know, I did not have a problem with Ballmer. In fact, I liked him a whole lot more than I expected to. I just didn't expect him to be engaging, and he was. The other people that he had up really weren't all that engaging. And the topics, the subject matter, the flow of it, it wasn't that great. I don't want to dwell on the keynote, but I wanted to kind of throw that out there and just share.
Okay, but I chuckled because I saw you tweeting and I'm like, you know, if this had happened at Jobs keynote, he would be hurling things at people right and left.
Oh, yeah. The people would have been fired. Entire teams of people would have been fired.
Because I think you saw one. We were there. We weren't within range. But I think there was something where he was demonstrating was it an iPod or something? And it malfunctioned. And he literally hurled it at some guy in the front row, which I think was, you know, the Apple people. Because so, he really got annoyed that it didn't work. So
on to the products, though, because, you know, we don't need to harp on this keynote thing. It was what it was.
Yeah.
The coolest thing that I saw that really caught my eye was by a company called Parrot, Parrot.com. They had this device called the AR drone. And what it is it's a hovercraft. It's pretty big. I would say it's, you know, maybe a foot and a half wide. And it's a remote controlled hovercraft. But the cool thing is it's Wi-Fi and it's remote controlled with your iPhone. And it has a camera in it. Actually, it has two cameras in it. So you can see on your iPhone screen what the hovercraft sees and you control it that way. So if your range is long enough, this thing could actually be out of sight and you could still be controlling it with the iPhone. So that was cool. I don't know what the battery life is on it. I mean, the thing is monstrous.
How big is this?
Like I said, it's probably a foot and a half wide. You know, it's a square device. It's got four propellers. You can, it's cool. They had a big booth. They had a big booth there that was screened in. They had like this mesh around it. I think that's the only way the CEA would let them, you know, put this thing on the show floor and remote control it. So that was pretty cool. That that really caught my eye. You know, that's,
okay. And weapons.
So no
weapon options on the hover.
Well, it has what they call some augmented reality games, where on the iPhone it will put up targets, and you have to aim the thing at the target and shoot on the deal. I didn't play with it enough to get all of that, but I know that there are some games. So that part of it's not real, but you're still playing the game and flying the deal, and you know, it's pretty cool. So that was the thing that caught my eye. Another thing that caught my eye was hypermac.com. They have these extended battery packs for not only iPhones and iPods, but also for MacBooks and MacBook Pros. And some of these things, you know, have a charge that's like three times as much as what you'd get in your MacBook Pro. They have MagSafe connectors, but the only way they work, the only way they get them is they have to buy the entire unit from Apple and strip it apart, which is just stupid. But looks like very cool stuff. I obviously didn't have a chance on the floor to test the actual life, so I can only go by what they claim. But these things looked cool. They had a nice, a nice feel to them. Very thin, and in different sizes, so you can decide, you know, do I need to have the big honking one that will do three times charge, or do I need one that's just, you know, two times or whatever? And so that stuff looked very cool too. I look forward to checking that out. The other thing, and this isn't Mac related at all, but the kind of one of the big trends there was this whole thing about 3D TV, John. And every company had it, you know, Panasonic, Samsung, they all had these huge, like monstrous, half a trade show floor size booths demoing all this 3D TV. And there were people waiting in line to go into a booth and watch a, you know, TV. Oh.
Okay, because what I was seeing, there's two different types. I don't know, have you seen Avatar 3D yet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's one style of 3D, but my understanding is that there are two major flavors. I don't know if you saw both, but one is where you have to wear the tinted polarized glasses.
Yes.
The other, I've seen ones that have something on where you do not need glasses, but they're not quite as nice, and that you have to be in a very specific place to get the 3D. And actually, we've seen that at past Macworlds. But
right. Right.
I would imagine that the glass, you know, the ones where you need the glasses are probably more prevalent, because I think that's probably a better approach.
Yeah. And that's what this was with the glasses. And, you know, they had, you know, 3D Blu-ray players and 3D televisions. And I mean, I get that. But at the same time, it's like, well, you know, why do we need special equipment to do this? We've been watching 3D stuff on our TVs for years. You know, you buy a movie, you put the glasses on, and you watch the 3D, and it is what it is. Yeah. But I guess some of this stuff, like THX certification, you know, you've got this, okay, this was built for 3D, and it's going to be a sharper picture. It's going to provide enough bandwidth to it to do what it does. That didn't impress me as much as Panasonic's 3D camera. They had a 3D, they had a 3D video camera. Yeah. And this got, you know, nobody was paying attention to this, but this was the game changer for me. Panasonic was demoing this 3D video camera, full HD video, and they had it live. They had the camera shining on a couple of balls that were hanging up in the air at, you know, at different depths away from the camera. And then you could look at the balls, and then you could put on the glasses and look at the screen. And the cool part was, the guy had a little remote for the camera because it was way up in the air. But on the camera, live in real time, he could change the depth of field right there for the 3D. Yeah. So, you know, this is, to me, the game changer, because it means you buy these cameras, and now not only are you filming 3D movies, you know, where you've got huge budgets, but, you know, you want to film 3D, you know, in a 3D episode of Heroes or a 3D episode of House or 24. And if you've seen Avatar, you know what's possible. It's not just the 3D where it's, you know, basically a 2D screen and, you know, a shark jumps out at you. Instead, now it's this whole immersive kind of world that you see. Yeah,
that's
so
cool.
Yeah. So watching TV, you know, as all TV shows move to this, and they will, it's going to be a much different experience. So that was the game changers, that, okay, these cameras are out there. So like Avatar, James Cameron had to build, you know, cameras to make all this work.
Okay. And, 'cause I was wondering, how do they make these? Is it post-processing, or is it, you know, as you said, two cameras to get the stereo,
right?
Or maybe a little, or a little digital magic, probably, or maybe a combination of all of
that's
them.
Right. Yeah, and certainly Avatar had the added complexity of it being a lot of it being CG, right? You know, computer generated.
Oh, I know. Yeah, so, I know they used the model of people because, of course, they resembled them.
Of course,
we don't want to give too much away, but yeah, there was a lot of CG. So I guess you do some of that in 3D, and
so that cool. was
a consumer
cool part
could make their own 3D.
Yes, a consumer
that I think
could,
is what you're saying.
A consumer
that's the cool
could,
part.
But so could a, you know, a medium budget television series that you know, isn't out there to make, you know, technological leaps and bounds. Mm. But just like the move to HD, you know, started many years ago, I think there will be a move to have all the TV series in 3D. And I think that'll be pretty cool, to be honest with you. So,
yeah, then how, you know, I'm thinking the nightmare, though, is that so you're going to have different sets of channels. So they're going to have to expand the bandwidth even more.
Of course.
So you're going to have your standard def channels, your HD channels like you do now, and then your 3D channels.
That's right. That's right.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Right, so your travels, Dave, how are those? Or you want to blow past that?
You know, I was going to blow past the travel stuff, but because Pete's here, I do want to have this conversation. So we'll save some time at the end of the show to talk about travel specific stuff, because it's not often we have Pete. And I have a question that actually is very relevant. So what I'm going to do quickly here, John, is talk about our first sponsor for the show. And then we'll move on to your Snow Leopard printing thing. How's that sound?
Excellent.
Okay. Our first sponsor is Barebones at barebones.com. And this week we're talking about Yojimbo. Now, and the reason we're talking about it is Barebones makes it. So, you know, they're paying us for the sponsorship and therefore we talk about one of their products. But the other reason is I freaking love Yojimbo. I use it every day. I couldn't possibly live without it. And I don't know how I'd organize the Mac Geek Cab without it. So what is it? It is a very simple piece of software into which you can put all sorts of data. Now, I have different categories. I can put data in, and by data I mean snippets of text, images, PDFs, audio snippets. You know, I can print to it. So anything that I can print, I can just print as a PDF to Yojimbo, and then I can categorize all this stuff. And I can have things live in multiple categories. So, for example, I have a Macworld 2010 category because that's coming up. But then that stuff might also be in the Mac Geekab category or the TMO category or the Backbeat Media category or all three, right? You know, and then it allows me to, and I can search for the data any way I want. I can encrypt certain items. So I have all of my banking and credit card data stored in Yojimbo, but it's encrypted. And the only way I can unencrypt it is with a password. And then it all syncs. It syncs with MobileMe. You can also sync it with Dropbox if you want. But I sync it with MobileMe because that works best for me. And then on all three of my machines, my Yojimbo data is everywhere. So I can pop it open. I can edit it. And then I can pop right back and I'm good to go. Yojimbo is available version 2.1 for just $39. Of course, there's a 30-day free trial you can go and download, and then you can get a family pack for $69, which I think gets you three licenses. And if you've got an older version of Yojimbo, it's only $20 to upgrade, but definitely go check it out. The thing I recommend is if you have been storing data, you know, when I started with Yojimbo, I had a folder worth of text files that was just stuff. You know, we all store that data somewhere. We have little notes that we keep for ourselves. Take all that and just dump it into Yojimbo, and then you'll start to see how it's really going to work for you. So it's at barebones.com, Yojimbo, for $39 US.
Sweet.
All right. You got a printer thing to talk about.
Here we go. Two
and
things.
I've been
so
jabbering.
One thing. Battery. I took your advice, Dave. I called Apple.
Oh, yeah.
I am out of warranty on my machine, but I do have AppleCare, and I called and basically said, you know, went through the script that we described. They said, yep, here's the battery. He's like, go to system profiler, blah, blah, blah. I didn't, you know, reveal my, you know, true nature.
Sure. So,
and at one point he's like, okay, what's your cycle count? I'm like, yeah. He's like, okay, then he said something that I thought was very cool. And I did not realize this was a part of solving the problem. If you go to system profiler, and this is even true in Leopard, but also Snow Leopard.
Yep.
File menu. Send to Apple.
Yeah.
So basically, all he asked me for was my serial number. He didn't ask me for my AppleCare number, though. I'm sure he linked that.
Sure.
But at that point, it sent my system data to him, and he verified it.
Oh, no.
So he didn't
kidding.
Just listen to me because, you know, I may have no idea what I'm talking about.
Right.
So he basically had a copy of what System Profiler did, which some people may freak out and say that's a privacy thing. Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff sure. in there. I don't think any of it is personally identifiable except maybe for applications installed in
right.
the computer.
Right.
But I don't think any confidential data ever gets revealed. So he was able to look at the power category and say, oh, yep, that battery's shot.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Huh.
So I just got two batteries today. They have the you know, prepaid return labels, and yep. I assume they're brand spanking new.
They will be.
And
you're gonna be blown away. I
right.
know.
And
I
then
was.
And then also actually someone and then I'll go to the printer thing.
Yeah.
But actually, one of our listeners actually mentioned that, and I thought it's a good point. We made a comment in the past about, you know, people using other people's batteries. As far as I know, the current batteries, and we should have remembered from the video we saw at Macworld, is that Apple currently manufactures the internal batteries.
Right. Yeah, the
so
built-in
to be clear,
ones, yes.
The built-in battery is Apple, I think, created and manufactured. Whereas prior batteries, like mine, I mean, I saw, you know, it says Sony, and I think
right.
Sony, Toshiba, you know, probably, you know, your usual,
yeah,
you know,
usual
computer
suspects.
Companies make them, and sometimes the cells freak out. So, anyway, so that made me happy that they, you know, basically, and it said, I think, reason insufficient battery life was the complaint or the code that comes up when they had the data that I sent them. So apparently we all encourage you. And I've heard also on through Twitter and other means, Snow Leopard is pretty darn good about telling when your battery is in bad shape.
It is.
With that, you know, service required thing. And I said, you know, they're like, why are you calling? I'm like, because Snow Leopard says service required. They're like, okay, we're sending you to the do-it-yourself department, which is the
yep.
people that issue user replaceable components. And then number two, so this was a big disappointment. So over the holidays, you know, I wanted to, and over vacation and all that, I wanted to print out some new pictures. And this has been something that's bugging me for a while. So I had not printed photos on my MacBook using Snow Leopard. So I loaded some pictures and I printed one on my HP DeskJet 990 CSE, which I think, Dave, you have the identical model because HP sent it to both of us to evaluate
years
the wireless
ago.
Space station.
Yeah.
And it's still a good printer. Here's the bad news. So I printed something out. It looked terrible.
Really?
It had like, so the greens that were supposed to be bright green grass were dark green. And so it was like, it was printing. Well, one, I had a problem with streaks and all that, so I had to purge the print heads. But then once everything printed out okay, the colors just weren't right.
Huh.
I'm like, what is going on? This worked fine under Leopard on my MacBook. What's different? Just to take a methodical approach to this, I printed the same picture on my G5 running Leopard to the same printer. Looked fine. Well, what can you conclude from that?
Print driver in Snow Leopard sucks.
You got it. And that's the answer. So I looked at the print driver, and it is not an HP print driver. It is a Gutenprint print driver.
Oh, okay.
And when I went online to HP to say, yo, what's up? Because I wanted to sound cool.
Because yeah. Because otherwise they won't listen to you unless you try to be hip and trendy.
But basically, I found a and basically their website said, oh, by the way, if you have a DeskJet 990 CSE, this is no longer supported under Snow Leopard. We are not going to make an HP driver for it ever. Too bad. We suggest you buy a newer printer. I'm like, you can't do this to me.
Yeah.
So I ranted about this on Twitter, and some people were like, well, dude, what do you expect for a 10-year-old printer? And I'm like, I expect it to work.
Expect it to work. Yeah.
I have a 10-year-old laser printer. It's a
hey, you have a 10-year-old car. That still works, doesn't it?
15-year-old car,
see,
dude.
That's what I'm saying.
And it's almost paid off, right, Chuck?
It is. Yeah. No, I got
just
a good loan.
Just four more years.
But I have a GCC Elite laser printer. Works fine under Snow Leopard. Works great. It's a 1200 DPI laser printer. Still works great. So I'm like, oh, this is terrible. And then one of our buddies, I can't remember who off the top of my head. I'll try to link to him in the notes or thank him. I think it was it Bart? I think it was Bart. You know what I'm talking about. Bart, I forget his last
Bart
name.
Bart Bouchatz. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe he suggested he was ranting about the same thing on Twitter.
Right, right.
And he's like, you know, my HP four-digit printer doesn't work. And he's like, but I tried the driver for another four-digit, you know, HP. So he found a slightly different driver, and all of a sudden his printer worked great. I'm like, wow, I wonder if I can use that trick. And as it turns out, so the issue is that when you are on Snow Leopard, they now designate. So when you go to system preferences, print and fax, and you pick it and then click on the printer and say printer setup under driver, when it's a Gutenprint, which is an open source printer, driver initiative, I mean, they're better than nothing, but sometimes that's what Apple has in there, especially for older printers. So I looked through the HP list, and it will explicitly say it's either Gutenprint or Cups and Gutenprint, which is another open source thing. And the first one that I found that was close, well, I tried another 9000 series, and that didn't work because it was four digits. So then I'm like, you know, let me try. And what I tried that worked was an HP, I think, 460, DeskJet 460.
Okay.
So I basically selected that. Not only did the picture print fine because I compared it to one that I already had printed before, I also got ink levels, Dave.
Really?
The HP driver for this printer, even under Leopard, would not do ink levels. And this is connected to the airport.
Wow.
So it not only works under Snow Leopard, I now have more functionality in that I can now see the ink levels on the ink cartridges.
All right.
Because we've discussed that before. It's a driver issue. Sometimes it just doesn't. Apparently, this old legacy driver is better than the one they had in Leopard.
So, to be clear, this legacy driver, yes. you installed from somewhere else, correct?
Oh, no. It was included. Okay. No. So, yeah, to be clear, this driver was listed
in Snow Leopard.
In Snow Leopard, but it was listed as not. So, if it's one of the open source drivers, after the printer name, it has Cups plus Gutenprint or Gutenprint.
Got it.
This one just said HP DeskJet, and I'll get the model number.
Yeah, it was just the generic
HP DeskJet 460 series, and that's all it said.
Got it.
So the reason I picked that is because I knew that is an HP supply driver and not a open source driver.
Correct. Okay, so
the key was for me.
Here's the thing. I've had this same problem with my HP laser printer here, and I got it working, no problem. And it worked before, but again, it was the same sort of thing. And then as soon as I went, now I had gone to HP's site to download their driver, right? And I installed it, and then everything worked the way I wanted it to until software update ran and said, we have an HP printer driver update for you. So if you
Sounds great.
Yeah. If you jump through these hoops, don't let the HP printer driver update. Now, in your case, that might be different, John, because you're using a driver that was baked into Snow Leopard, whereas I pulled something in from outside. So
I'm hoping now they could be jerks and replace it with one that says, because right now it's dumb enough to say, I think I'm talking to an HP 460.
Right.
It seems to, respond to what I say.
That's true. You know, I wouldn't.
And I'm getting ink levels. And that's the exciting thing, was now the first time that I've ever used this machine, Dave, when the ink levels get low, because one of my cartridges is low, you see a yellow button.
Yeah.
You've seen this, a caution that your supplies are getting low. So I'm like, so that surprised
me
that the older driver does more. So you may want to update yours.
Well,
if you still have that printer, I don't know what you use it for.
I do, actually. It's sitting in the house. I think we've printed to it, but only, web pages and things that the color doesn't matter. We haven't printed pictures to it. So I'll bear that
in mind. Photo printer.
So
it prints very nice photos.
One last time, which driver is it? If you have it right in front of you.
It's the HP DeskJet 460 series.
460. Okay, cool. I'll bear that in mind. That's good. Thanks, man.
And now you know how much ink you have left before you have to spend another wad of dough on another expensive ink cartridge.
Well, that's the thing. You might as well. I guess the next time I run out of ink, I might as well just buy a new printer. I think it's cheaper. all right. So we're going slowly around the horn here tonight. Pete, you had
let's move.
Not one, but two Mac issues today.
Yeah.
So the first one that you had is actually the quick solution, but talk about what you did, what your cousin, I guess, did.
My nephew, yeah.
Nephew,
I was sitting there today, and I got a text message going, hey, Uncle Pete, I stuck my one of those mini DVDs in my MacBook, and now I can't get it out.
Yeah, so there's these little three and a half inch, whatever, small.
Yep. And I'm like, oh, dude. I said, all right.
He said, what?
Yeah, I couldn't believe he did. Because if it's a drawer, that's one thing. It slides out, it goes in. But to stick it in that slot and hope it lines up and works, I'm just thinking, oh,
well,
because it actually worked, but then he couldn't get it out.
I'll say, Pete, I will agree with him. A properly designed product should not allow that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think like Steve now, is that if you don't want me to put in a... that's a big problem with it, because, yeah, of course, yeah, the, you know, tray-based ones take that no problem, but...
Exactly. So what I did is I said, all right, well, first thing I said, do you have a credit? He's a freshman in college. Do you have a credit card, I asked?
Oh, yeah.
Or something like one. And then I would try to ask Dave in the interim, but he came back and said, yeah, I do. I said, all right, well, here's what you need to do. You need to slide that credit card in there and try to eject it. And you can either use the eject button or go into disk utility and try it that way, or reboot the machine and hold down the mouse button while it's going, and that should send the eject signal. And about 10 minutes later, he texted me back. He goes, oh, sweet, it worked. So I had a warped DVD that I brought back from overseas one time, and it wouldn't come out either. And I tried that many, many months ago. You slide that credit card in there, and it helps guide it right out. I believe you want it on top. I think the issue is it's getting jammed on top, so you want that card to be over the top of it.
Right.
To help guide it out the slot. So that's what I think was...
Okay,
doing.
Initially I thought you were going to charge him.
Yeah, exactly. I need your credit card, buddy. Yeah.
Always get payment before offering the solution.
That's right.
That's right. That's right. That's good. But Pete, you actually mentioned something that I had to use the other day. I was running some Apple hardware test stuff. Holding down the mouse button when you boot the machine will eject anything in the DVD drive, and that sometimes is necessary if for whatever reason.
Right. And the other caution I gave him was, do not lose the credit card in that slot. It will void your warranty. Oh, yeah.
Well, until the tech finds it, then he's going to be like,
that's
right.
That's right.
I ain't going very far on it.
There is, and I've been searching online for one, and I can't find it, so maybe they don't exist, but there used to be adapters, because I used to get those mini CDs, you know, when I would get, like, CD singles or whatever, you know, when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Not quite a kid, but, you know, in my late teens, I guess, was when those came out. But it would work fine for the mini DVDs too. It's essentially a little adapter, a piece of circular plastic that has a hole in the middle, and you pop the mini DVD in the middle, and then it's a full size DVD that you could put in your machine and not get stuck. So that's how you get those in there. Or you use a tray loading DVD drive, and you'll see the tray will have a little indent in the middle of it where that mini disc will sit. So that's how you do those. If you don't want to have to jump through
Put it in a tray loading one, break the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, copy the dang thing to a bigger one. And
and be done with the stupid mess. Yeah. All right. So then you had an issue, which strangely enough was exactly like a question that we didn't prep for the show. So I'm finishing up dinner, Pete, and you call me on my cell phone and you ask me the question, and tell me what the problem was, and then we'll talk about
my son's
solution.
MacBook. He's trying to get on and go to the high school website where they post grades and assignments and that sort of thing. And there's also he uses Gmail as a client to access his email account, and he can go to any website except his Gmail account, and he can't get to his high school account. Go, what's going on here? What's the common denominator? So I tried in Firefox, I tried in Safari, I even tried it in CMonkey, and all three browsers, it wouldn't do it. Then I looked, go to Yahoo, fine. Go to Google, fine. So the common denominator there was then it wouldn't make an SSL connection. It would not secure. And so that's when I called you and I said, look, I've looked at my firewall, I've looked at security, I can't think what's going on. And you mentioned go to this question, so I went in and looked in the books, and one of the four items that John prepped on it was parental controls. And I went, bingo, I've been in the parental controls on his machine. And so I went in there and looked, and the funny thing is, you go into system preferences and then go into parental controls, and of course you're going to have to turn on parental controls if it isn't already to see this. But once you've done that, the content tab has three options. Four, actually. You can hide profanity in the dictionary. Go. All right. But down below, it says website restrictions. And it says allow unrestricted access to websites. The other one is try to limit access to adult websites automatically. And then there's a customize tab. And then allow access to only these websites is your third one. So when you type that or hit that, I'm assuming you get get to go in. Well, I had tried to limit access to adult websites automatically. I had gone in and customized, and I had specifically authorized both Gmail and his high school website to work.
Yep.
But in both cases, you know, and then, so I took those out of there. I went, all right, it's seeing them as not allowing it or something, because there's two windows there, allow this, don't allow. But as soon as I went back to allow unrestricted access to websites, it worked perfectly. And so for whatever reason, even though I've allowed mail.google.com, it was not let in. I tried it with and without the S and with and without the www and all, and it just wasn't working. So my solution there is go back to OpenDNS to control your kids' access, if that's a better solution.
Right, right.
Here. So I still am using this, the parental controls for his time limits on the machine. But
interesting. Kids these days.
Yeah. But then there was the other one in there that I had a question about, actually, that John had gone with, was the keychain. John, what path were you heading down there? Because I
Here is the issue that Kevin had. So Kevin had an issue where he could not access HTTPS sites.
Any of them.
Right. It would come up and say Safari says can't open page because it can't establish a secure connection. So to me, what that message indicates is that it can communicate with the site. It's not like site not found. It's just when it tries to do
right there,
the
I
security
got was
dance.
Data transfer interrupted. It communicated with the site and interrupted data transfer.
All right. That sounds like a, yeah.
You're going to see a different message with the parental, I think. Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah.
Saying can establish a secure connection to me means it started to communicate with it, tried to negotiate a security protocol, and then for some reason somebody said, I can't do this. And some of the suggestions quickly that I have in that vein were when you establish a secure connection, you typically use something on your computer and the other computer called a certificate, and they have to match up. I'm not going to get into what a certificate is. We've talked about this before, but it's basically a block of data where if you have one version and a remote website has the complementary piece, you're assured that your communication is secure. And I think that's fairly accurate. The problem is if one of those pieces gets screwed up, either corrupted on your machine or perhaps, and I've seen this a lot of times on various commerce sites, which kind of disturbs me, is certificates have a lifetime and they can expire. So what will happen is you'll try to connect to a website like your bank or someone, and it'll say, oh, their security certificate, which I get, you got to pay a recurring fee to maintain these.
We have one.
And they have a lifetime because that's good security practice. You don't want it to be valid for 100 years. You want it to be valid maybe for a year or two. The problem is if you don't pay the fee, then the date on it is before, expires. And then the browser, when you go to it, says, it's expired. Do you want to connect to it anyways? And usually you can say yes, which in and of itself is probably not great practice, saying, well, this site is warning you something's wrong. Do you want to continue anyways? Yeah, sure, whatever. But, you know, same things with Windows signed drivers and all that fun stuff. So anyways, that's one thing. And then you may want to look in your keychain utility, because certs are stored in your keychain, and your keychain may be corrupted or screwed up.
Oh, yeah.
And there's keychain first aid, I think it's called, or some repair utility in the keychain. So if you're having connection issues with secure sites, maybe you got to fix your keychain. Can't hurt. And then the other thing is, though it's kind of buried in the midst of time here, I don't use proxy service days. A proxy server is kind of a go-between. But in OS X, there is a way to set a proxy server. Usually if you go to your network interface, click on advanced, and then it'll list, I think, proxy. And it'll list the number of protocols. In the old days, what happens is that you had to go to a certain machine to get out to the big wide world. If, for some reason, your proxy is set, and it shouldn't be, your computer, and there is a way to say, okay, if you're doing HTTPS or a secure website, go to this IP address to ask for permission to get out. If that's set, then you'll see the same behavior.
Okay.
Right, but I haven't used a proxy server in ages. I know
we have to use one for work, and they use their own homegrown generated certificate, so they don't pay the fee. But
well, it's a local, but then it gives you a warning
it's
saying
land.
It's a locally signed certificate.
That's right.
And it's
and
like, do you trust this?
It. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Or they won't.
So, cool. So, but you know, I hate proxy servers because when my place eventually. You know, I was there before they had a T1 line. When they got a T1 line with the, they had a proxy server. The problem is everybody dogpiles on the proxy machine, and it's a bottleneck unless you give it enough oomph or bandwidth. I don't like proxy servers. There are better ways to do that through, you know, DNS and other things. That's just my opinion, though. Or through the router. Don't make your users have to configure their software to get out to the world. Just
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. All right, so I have two things to add to that. One, one is just a clarification. In keychain access, which is found in applications utilities, as of Leopard, the keychain first aid utility is actually baked into it. So you go open up keychain access.
It was a separate utility before.
It was, yep. Okay. You go to keychain access menu, which is just the one to the right of the Apple menu, and then choose keychain first aid from there. Then at that point, you can do the repairs you need. One other thing I'll point out, as you were mentioning, John, that these keychain certificates, sorry, not the keychain certificates, but any certificate can expire. If the date on your computer is wrong, it's possible that all of, you know, in Kevin's problem here, you know, he says none of the sites he tries work. Possible, you know, I know our computers set the dates automatically and all that, so we don't even think about it. But if something has gone wrong there and his date is, you know, even a year in the future, he's going to have all kinds of problems. So check the date. That would be the one thing I would add.
Oh, right.
Right. The date on your computer, you never know.
If your computer thinks it's later. Oh, I like that. I don't know why that happened. If anything, I usually see computers revert to the epoch. As we
that's
call
right.
it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Thinking it's 1970 or something like that. So
right. Okay. we in show 234, we talked about a couple of different ways that a user, and I forget his name, could get to the calculator very, very quickly. And the one thing that we missed, there were a couple of things, but
he wanted it up front, I think. At all times, he wanted the calculator right there because he was doing spreadsheet work and stuff like that. And we made some suggestions, but I think we got some better ones.
Well, we got more. That's right. So
maybe not better, just more.
Yeah. Many people, including Alexander and David and a couple others, said that the calculator widget in the dashboard is the only calculator they use. And of course, that's just one little click or. I'm told you can use F3 to get to the dashboard. Is that have you done that successfully, John? Or maybe you can set that in Exposé, right? I think that's the trick.
F4 on my MacBook will go to dashboard.
Okay, F4. Okay, all right. That's right. Yeah, F4 on mine is what pulls it up. There you go. Thank you. So there you go. That's one click access. You know, I'm actually going to play this audio comment because it talks about something very cool that you can do with the dashboard where you don't even have to pull it up.
Hi there, guys. Love the show. Long time listener, first time caller. Calling in about episode 234 and the gentleman who works with spreadsheets and needs a calendar to stay on top. Or not a calendar, but a calculator. One thing that I thought of was if you use Onyx, which I think most everybody does, go to the dashboard section and set developer mode on. With that, you can use the simple provided Mac OS X calculator in dashboard. And when you hold down a click of the mouse on the calculator and also F12, it will then drop the calculator onto the desktop. And it will always be floating on top of anything you use. No need to pay for any software. And it works great. I just thought I'd drop a line. Take care. Bye-bye.
And very cool. Thank you. And so that was Mr. X, but not the real Mr. X.
Another Mr. X.
That's
right. And actually, that's I've heard about that secret developer mode that, because I guess all developers need an electronic calculator too.
No. The developers need to have their dashboard widget up while they're in Xcode and they don't want to have to switch back and forth to the dashboard to test their widget. Yeah, that's why that developer mode exists. You knew that. You were just making fun, weren't you? And I didn't.
Yes.
I didn't get the joke. Yeah. All right. But the real Mr. X called in about a different topic that we discussed last week. That was NTFS.
Hey, this is Mr. X again. just wanted to say, if you ever expect you might be working on other people's computers, and you can possibly avoid it, you might not want to make your Mac open NTFS files as read-write. What happened to me one time was I was working on somebody's computer, It was a Windows computer. Their computer wasn't booting up, was giving you a blue screen of death. I put an Ubuntu disk into the machine and was able to see all the files on the hard drive, because it didn't mount the drive as read-write, it just mounted it as read-only, but I wasn't able to copy anything off. I connected it to my Windows PC laptop that I had at the time, and even plugging it in as an external drive, plugging it into my Windows laptop would cause my Windows laptop to blue screen. So I took it home, put it on my Power Mac that I had, and was able to copy everything over to an HFS drive, burn it to a DVD, and then put the drive back into the machine and put Windows back on it. So apparently there are certain data structures on an NTFS drive, and if...
You know what? I blew that because I started moving my mouse around. But suffice to say...
I thought he remounted his NTFS drive.
That's right. I shouldn't have stored that audio comment on an NTFS drive. But John, you said you've run into this, right?
Well, I have too. So, and it'll go on a little... another contributor, and I think you saw my note about this, Allison,
yep.
At Oscillocast, basically wrote me, because I guess I was lucky enough to figure out a problem with her when we were on her machine when we were at Blogworld. So she's having problems where she's getting hard lockups, and by a hard lockup, yeah. what I'm talking about is if you have the clock running in the menu bar and you do seconds, the clock stops. To me, if your clock stops in the upper right-hand corner, in addition to some other signs, that means your machine is having a really bad time of it on a hardware level, in that it's wedged, it's stuck, it's not going anywhere. And usually when you see that, you'll also probably notice that you don't have a cursor and nothing else is responding. You can't alt tab or control tab or command tab or whatever the heck it is. You know, it's one of those. Try them all. Anyways, and that's what happened. So I was speculating to her, it could be. And then she asked me, could it be my hard drive? And the thing I reflect on is that, so I just did the read-write NTFS thing on an external drive I just got as an extra, just to play around with it. And I've noticed ever since I've made my NTFS drive through the method we talked about, which is changing the mount NTFS command.
Yep.
I got a hard lockup probably the first time ever in using Snow Leopard. And that the machine, my MacBook, was wedged. And I'm going to say the correlation between those two events was pretty high. So I'm going to say when you and I were pontificating about why running NTFS and read-write is something you can do but should not, why shouldn't you? I think this is the reason. I suspect the implementation, whether it's Apple or somebody else, is unreliable. So if you're going to do NTFS write, either get something. I've had better luck hard locks with NTFS 3G, or I think, is it, who's the other vendor that makes it? There's a vendor. We'll find it.
Okay.
Maybe you got it.
I forget. Yeah.
All right. But we have it. We have
put it in the
prior
show. Yeah.
So anyways, NTFS built into OS X, be careful. And just a general caution, when, especially when we talk about doing things with your machine, that, you know, always exercise caution in this case. I mean, we like geeking out. I'd like geeking out, but it turned out it caused me some inconvenience, and we certainly don't want to reduce the number of working computers out there.
That's right.
At least ones that our listeners are using.
So there's Mac Fuse and Paragon software.
And then there's also
one called Tuxera, which has NTFS for Mac. So
excellent. And Mac Fuse, I think, is NTFS 3G, though Mac Fuse is a platform that allows plugins, of which NTFS 3G is one of them. But yeah, so I haven't heard any bad things from people about any of those. I would say NTFS 3G and Mac Fuse that's open source. So, you know, it's not a commercial product. And the Paragon guys, we've got some very good feedback from a lot of the listeners. So, if you want reliable NTFS writing on a Mac, which on the one hand, why would you even want to do that? But if you need to, I think that's the best choice is my conclusion at this point.
Cool. All right. There's a couple of cool things found that we can squeeze into the show here. Randy wrote in, and I'm finding Randy's email here. Randy said, you mentioned some pref apps on the most recent show. This is the best one I've ever run across, and it's called Pref Setter. It is a plist editor, which allows you to edit preferences, but And it will allow you to edit any plist file, but it's really geared toward, this one is geared toward editing preference plists. And it allows you to search your preferences and also shows you what's in there and gives you the ability to edit some of the settings that might not be apparent when you're out there with other things. The cool part was I just happened to open the Finder one, and I also checked the Dock one. It gave me, as soon as I opened the file, it gave me a little button at the top that said quit and relaunch Dock or quit and relaunch Finder. So it was smart enough to know that after I finish editing this file, I need to relaunch these apps that are running so that they take advantage of these new settings that I put in. Nice. This is for, not for the faint at heart. You can definitely screw things up with this. There's nothing to stop you from completely ruining things. So, use with caution, but that's Pref Setter. So thanks, Randy.
Yeah, I'd say looking at Pref files is probably a good first step.
Yes.
Writing to them. That's where you got to put on the propeller beanie or, as you said, Dave, make a backup or something.
Yeah, big time.
And my favorite is still the one included with the developer tools, but not everybody is into installing Xcode.
Right.
To me, that one is at least this looks, I just downloaded and installed it, and this actually looks to have a different, and I'll figure out why, but a different, actually it categorizes things. I like that. So I think a nicer interface, because I think the Apple one is kind of bare bones.
That's right.
It just lets you edit and view.
That's right.
All right.
Mark wrote in last week. We were talking about finding the IP addresses of all the devices that existed on our networks. And Mark said, I've just found a neat and simple iPhone app called SNAP, Snap, which does it cleanly and fast. It's $1.99. I checked it out. And sure enough, it does. You just launch the thing. And then as you kind of drill down onto the devices, it shows you what services those devices have open. So, if you go to your router, it's going to show, DNS and web and, it'll give you kind of an idea of what's going on in the network. So, Mark, thank you. Mark also mentioned a Mac program called Flame, which we'll also link to, but it only shows you Bonjour devices. So it's only going to show you devices that are advertising services. If you're looking for a printer or something like that, it's going to show up. But if you're trying to find a computer that's just out there, it may not appear. So thank you, Mark. That's very cool. I'm looking at the time. I definitely want to go through this travel thing while we've got
Pete, you said before, though.
But yeah, let's talk about Marcus.
Okay, I think we'll see if we can blaze through this.
That's right. Okay, so Marcus writes, my wife and I recently bought a new 27-inch iMac. We want to set up two user accounts on this machine because we each want to set up mail for our own individual email accounts and because we each have our own bookmarks in Safari and our own iGoogle pages. However, we'd really like to use the same address book, iCal, iPhoto, and iTunes. Is there a way for both of us to have the same access to these but still have two separate user accounts so as to keep our email and bookmarks separate? We both also have iPhones, which we'd like to sync with our own email accounts and Safari bookmarks. The address book and iCal would be the same on both iPhones. And we'd like to sync iPhoto and iTunes content as we each see fit. Does this complicate things a bit more? And one more thing. One final question. Is there a way to do fast user switching without having to enter a password every time as we switch accounts? I mean, we trust each other. Okay. I'm going to throw out my things here, and then I think you've got some specific instructions for them.
Should I start or okay? No, giving your view is probably a good start. Yes,
I'll give the general stuff, and then okay. So here's my thoughts for iPhoto and iTunes. It's fairly straightforward to set up one location for each library, and then point each user's account to that library only. And John, you're going to go through the specifics of how to do this. Mm-hmm. The caveat here is that you can only have one copy of iTunes actively accessing that library at a time and iPhoto without potentially opening yourself up to catastrophic damage. So, if you're going to do the fast user switching thing, you need to be very careful to make sure that you quit iPhoto and iTunes on one side before switching over to the other. But that will work. And while it's possible to do the same thing with address book and iCal, I don't recommend it. The reason is, unless you're going to disable fast user switching, and the reason is there are many apps like Mail, but others as well, that use the address book and iCal data in a very live sense. So if you've got two active copies pointing at this, I don't know what's going to happen. It might just work fine and it might be totally seamless, but at the same point, it might not be. My advice would be to use either MobileMe or Google as kind of the cloud-based sync engine to sync your separate copies of your address books and calendars with each other. And that's going to be a safer way to go. And then the cool part is you can, you know, sync that down to your phones. So, and then I'll throw in the answer to the fast user question switching, which is remove the passwords from the accounts, and the fast user switching should work without asking.
Oh,
that's what I do at the house with the kids, and it works fine. So you've got some specifics.
I would say from a security standpoint, but yeah, if it's a household thing, then yeah, that's cool. So I dug into this too, responding to the possibility of doing any of this, and here's how to specifically do this. So both iPhoto and iTunes, at least on Mac, perhaps not on Windows, which have bugged me because it was part of another question that we got. I couldn't find an answer on Windows, at least not same as the Mac. If you launch either iPhoto or iTunes, hold down option. And if you hold down option, what happens is you'll be asked, what library would you like? You can choose the current library, or you could create another one, or you could point at another one.
Right.
So I would say both iPhoto and iTunes are pretty straightforward, unless with any of these, as you pointed out, Dave, if it's on a single machine, then I think you're cool.
Yeah.
If you're on multiple machines, then it gets kind of tricky. It's possible on a network share drive, I would think, would be the best approach. But anyways, both iPhoto and iTunes let you select the library or through their preferences, but that's the quickest way, is holding an option.
I'm going to interrupt here because Pete points out a very valid piece of data. If you have this stuff on the local drive, permissions start to get in your way. So even if you store it in the shared folder inside the users folder, things can still get funky. So if possible, storing this on an external drive with permissioning turned off will completely eliminate thank you, Pete, for
pointing
that out.
Mine's on a NAS drive. That's where my iPhone is.
And actually, NAS being network attached storage.
That's right.
For you to say.
For a network drive.
It's harder to talk after an hour. You know, we can only drink so much water while we're doing this. So
Is that what that is?
That's water today.
Well, no, that's a good one, Dave. Or the other approach, and I think we actually had another listener write in. You go to the folders and you set the access for everybody. So even though you have user accounts,
set
an admin account and say, okay, these folders, the music folder and the document, whatever folders where you want to share the data, everybody gets to play in that.
That's true. And that way you don't have to cop out with permissions.
It's a little advanced.
Yeah, that's
true. I wouldn't recommend it for the newbie, but I think for the people that listen to this show, I think that's something I think they can handle. So iCal, to wrap it up, iCal, if you go to preferences, that also has an account setting, and you can choose your iCal account, and address book as well. If you go into address book, preferences, accounts, it lists the accounts that you can sync that computer with, or that account with, and that can be with MobileMe, Yahoo, or Google, from what I saw in address book, which I did not know this because I use MobileMe.
Yep.
I just renewed my membership. I still like MobileMe just because it's Apple, and I know they have their hiccups, but hey.
Yeah, so here Pete's pointing out that the simple answer is just go out and buy BusyCal. It's, what, $40?
Yeah.
And then you can share, you could have both copies open on both sides. It'll see them, you know, over the LAN and give you read-write access back and forth. So much better. And then if you also want to sync it up to Google, you can, but that's the answer.
Oh, we do. And the cool thing is with BusyCal, if I put something in on my iPhone, it shows up on her iPhone, on her BusyCal, on the Google Calendar. It's magic.
Yeah,
it's completely,
as it should
it's
be.
Cool. Oh, yeah.
So BusyCal is a iCal replacement?
Yes. And if you could throw away iCal once you get BusyCal, you're better off. So.
Or if you were Apple, you would probably buy BusyCal and just,
you know, Apple's
iCal.
Been so freaking stupid with iCal since the day they released it. I don't
tell us how you feel.
I don't think they're smart enough to realize that they should buy it because they haven't bothered to fix iCal and make it usable by anybody that's doing more than very simple things. I'm not saying that you are a simpleton if you use iCal. I'm just saying that
you better not, because I use it
for yourself.
As soon as you there are walls at which iCal's functionality totally crumbles, and they're
tasks,
not
right.
You've gone on. Sharing calendars, tasks, anything.
Well,
you really want to do.
I gotta say, in their defense, is that the Snow Leopard Exchange server integration, which I use because in the workplace we have Exchange server, and both the connectivity through the Apple programs, which would include Address Book, iCal, and Mail, to Exchange Server, as well as the iPod Touch or iPhone, of course, they did a pretty good job.
You're right.
To use my iPod Touch to check my work email rather than firing up either my Windows machine or even my Mac with Entourage.
Yeah,
because it's just the quickest way, and they did a nice job of both that and VPN on the iPod Touch that's my feedback, is that the programs, iCal, so I'll say they enhanced it, but it pales in comparison to BusyCal. So Apple, come on, man, pick them up.
Yeah.
They got the cash, right?
Oh, yeah, it'd be great. I'm sure the BusyCal guys would be happy to sell for the right price, and I know Apple wouldn't kill the product off because it's way better than iCal. They'd just replace it. So
Speaking of cash, Dave, I do believe that Apple is having a earnings call.
They are, but we're not going to talk about that because we don't really have time.
Good.
And I want to do this
travel
thing.
We have no time.
Thing.
We have more stuff?
Yeah, like I said, because Pete's here, I want to have this quick travel conversation. So this was there's two things. The first one's not for Pete, but I might as well mention it anyway. This was the first time coming back from Las Vegas. I was able to, when I went to check in on American, I went to check in online and I had three options: print your boarding pass, email it as a PDF so you can print it later, or email it to your phone. So you have an electronic boarding pass on your mobile device. So I thought, well, that's great. I don't have a printer in my hotel room, so this is what I'm going to do.
An electronic boarding pass.
It sends a picture to. Actually, it sends you an email link, which you then open up in your, in Safari on your phone, and then it has two those 3D barcodes. Actually, I had one for each flight, so
I'm going to guess it's probably a 2D barcode.
Sorry, a 2D barcode.
Probably a data matrix or PDF 417, but yes. So the barcode that you typically get on the boarding pass that you print out yourself or the agent gives you is on your device.
Correct. And it's a
on
little
your screen.
Bit, it looks
okay.
a little bit different, but yes, it's there. And so I got to the security counter and I'm thinking, what's going to happen? You know, and sure enough, our agent from the troop of security actors asked me to take my phone and put it up against this IR reader, barcode scanner, not IR, but, the red light barcode scanner. So I put it up
laser
there.
Laser barcode scanner. Oh, and it scanned it from the.
Yeah.
Well, that's unusual.
It scanned it right on my phone. Of course, as I put my phone up there, the picture rotated and got really small and it didn't work. And so here's what I recommend you do. You make that barcode real big on your screen by stretching it out and then take a screenshot of it and use that screenshot as the thing that you hold up to security. So that way, if it rotates, it still stays basically the same size and it works fine. So it worked. They let me through once I got it the right size.
That's nice because they're, in my opinion, they're pushing it because I've done a little barcode work and.
Yep.
They only have a limited amount of real estate, and the problem is certain parts of the barcode have to be a certain size for their scanners, whether it be laser or imagers. The newer ones use a camera, actually, a digital camera, little baby digital camera.
Okay.
It may still be a red light, but they just use that for illumination. But the thing is, they may be actually taking a picture, but the problem is if the resolution of the barcode is too crummy.
Yeah.
In that it's not enough DPI or resolution or whatever, then it's going to fail. And then that's why doing it on I would say for the most part, although it sounds awesome for convenience.
There were quite a few people in the security line with me that did it this way. Yep.
And did they all, were there any you know, hiccups and that they were like, oh, can't scan it. Because I've seen that occasionally with paper ones. I mean, if you had it in your pocket or you crumpled it up or you whatever, you know, I mean, if the paper you printed on is, you know, all messed up, then yeah, you're not going to scan the barcode.
No, so mine was the only one that had any problems because it got small. But like I said, I highly recommend take a snapshot and also crank up your brightness. Now, of course, here's the trick. I got to the gate and I handed my iPhone to the guy to, you know, scan as I got on the plane. He's like, oh yeah, that doesn't work here at the gate. You need a paper one. So
I was going to say you were very generous to hand the guy your iPhone.
You know, but he let me on the plane. He's like, what's your last name? And he checked me in. Okay, so now here's the thing I want to talk about. And this is Mac related. I've been doing a lot of traveling lately, and I've been really trying to do two things. One, not check any bags, because especially returning at Boston's Logan Airport, it's a 20-plus-minute wait for your luggage, and I just don't have that time to kill when I get off the plane. I just want to go home.
Yeah, but then you got whole carry-on.
It's fine. I haven't had any issues with security in terms of the carry-on, but it does limit my space. Number two, I've been trying to limit myself to one carry-on, which means not a suitcase and a laptop bag, but just a suitcase that I put my laptop in. And I did that this time. And what I did for my laptop was I used a very thin sleeve that I could use as a backpack also for my laptop. But I just put the laptop in the sleeve and I put that in my suitcase so I could easily pull it out and go through security. So that part was fine. I had heard, but I wanted the biggest, the largest amount of carry-on that I could get, because I know I'm putting my laptop in and I also need clothing and, you know, all that stuff for a couple of days. So I'd heard a lot of people raving about these Tom Bin bags, especially the Aeronaut, because it's the maximum size carry-on. But it was these Tom Bin bags they aren't wheeled, right? And I thought, well, you know, there's so many, you know, road warriors that just rave about these things. I might as well try it. So I wound up trying the L.L. Bean equivalent, but it's basically the same bag. I know if there's road warriors out there that know the differences between the two, you're going to tell me they're not the same. And you're right. But essentially, these are a duffel bag that is dimension wise the biggest carry on that you can get. And because it's a duffel bag, it's very light and the sides are very thin, so you can fit as much luggage as possible. So I did that and it worked, but it sucked at not having the ability to put this thing on wheels. So I'm trying another option. Casemate actually has the LLR-222. That's LLR-222, which is actually a wheeled bag that's built to do exactly what I want, including its own little laptop sleeve that's security friendly. So I'm going to try that for one of my next trips. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go to Macworld with just one carry-on bag. In fact, I'm pretty sure I won't. I'm probably going to have to check stuff there, but otherwise I'm really getting away from this whole checking luggage thing. It's just become a fiasco.
You know, another option.
So this is what I wanted you here.
Not as expensive as it used to be compared to the fact that, well, you've probably got platinum miles and such, so you aren't paying the bag fees.
I'm not paying bag fees, right.
Yeah, okay, so it is still more expensive, but is to FedEx your bags ahead of yourself. A lot of people, we're seeing so many pieces of luggage checked. And sent ahead.
That I might do for Macworld
Expo.
People
shipped it?
Absolutely. People ship their luggage all the time now.
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, I remember
trade shows of past.
And it's more reliable.
I don't want to get too far off on a tangent here, sure. Though I'm sure we will.
I have a mini.
It's late. But before we go on, we'll go there. But before we go there, I want to ask Pete, you travel a ton, and I know you can't check bags very often.
Almost never.
Yeah. Almost never. So what do you do?
Mine's a pretty neat thing. P-U-R-D-Y space N-E-A-T things, T-I-N-G-S.
Okay.
Now, it's a heavier bag. It's a metal frame, soft side, metal external frame, soft-sided, and they're a little expensive, but they're canvas, and they last forever. And you can send them in for refurb. I'm on my second bag in 15 years, and that's only because I was too smart by half. And I went out and got myself a new Samsonite or something like that, which I trashed in about 18 months, and I went right back to pretty neat things.
Okay.
And I love that bag. It's got smooth wheels, soft foam grips, lifetime warranties on the zippers. You pay for it, but it's in there. I think it's the 22.
22.
Inch.
That's the biggest you're going to get.
And
yeah.
You will see 95% of your air crews hauling around a pretty neat things bag.
Okay.
Behind them. In fact, you will be mistaken for a pilot if you have one. And
okay. Right. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Now, do you ever put your laptop in it?
I do.
Okay. So there are times when you don't have a backpack for your laptop. You're just carrying it that way.
I do. Well,
okay.
When I can go really light, I do.
See, and I should have just asked you about this months ago. I don't know why.
The other neat thing about that, again, is a road warrior thing. There are things in that suitcase that, for instance, I can find my eyeglass repair screwdriver in the middle of the night because it's always in the same pocket. And it has been there for 10 years. I know where the USB cords and my adapters are, because it's in the same outside side pocket. This thing has a bunch of external pockets, which is really huge.
That's
when
huge.
You're traveling all the time.
Yeah.
To be able to get something without having to get in and dig under your dirty skivvies looking around for it. And,
okay.
Yeah.
So, okay. So
that's what I do.
Okay. So yeah. So I'm heading down the same path that you've already figured out. I should have asked you a long time
ago. Yeah, sorry.
I'm the stupid one. Yeah. All right. So your tangent, John, go.
I forgot.
Something about a Mini. We have a Mini Cooper?
Mini Tangent is what he meant.
Mini Tangent, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it'll come back someday. Yeah. No, Dave, how was your... No, you mentioned your travel was more expedient than usual, especially in light of Underpants Boy.
Oh, yeah, it was no problem. I haven't had any security issues whatsoever. Now, to be fair, I've been flying American, on which I have enough status to where I get to wait in different security lines. So,
and you're off... And you're off the bad boy list.
Yes.
Because you were on the bad boy list for a while. I think you petitioned the TSA and they said, you're not the evil Dave Hamilton. Sorry about that.
I got a redress number, which was just my case number
on some airline sites where when you sign up. Yeah, I was surprised. I'm like, what is this redress? So the redress number is the number which I think tells the airline, okay, check the TSA database.
You got it.
To make sure this guy is legit, because if he is, then he's in the database with this reference number. So I'll ask you for that later.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. No,
I'm sure it's just a number. But there was some terrible person that had your name out there for a while.
Because
you told me you couldn't do auto, you couldn't get your boarding passes.
No. Nope.
You couldn't do anything. They always hassled you.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. No, it sucked. It was terrible. All right. It's time to bring the band in. We're running as late as we've ever.
How
run,
long?
I think.
Is this the longest show
ever?
I don't
know. It's close. We're at 110, 111 now. So.
Okay. Not quite the longest, but we had a lot of stuff and we're feeling good.
That's good. All right. A couple of things here. Contact information. We never did get to that.
Oh, my gosh. How would you contact us, Dave? I would pick up the phone and call 206-666-GEEK, which is
4335. But I think even better than that, and certainly more popular with our listeners, is to email us, because you can not only email text, but you can email audio comments as well to feedback@macgeekgab.com.
I think there was a problem there because I didn't quite hear you. Did you say feedback@macgeekgab.com, Dave?
Oh, you heard me. I said feedback@macgeekgab.com. And then, you can Skype us at MacGeekGab. That is the audio quality-wise, that's the worst way, but it does work and we can hear you. So, feel free to use that as well. Okay, Macworld Expo is the next time I have to travel. Speaking of travel, John, you're going too.
We got a few things. Or you were going to cover them, but a few things people have asked us about. So you and I are doing a podcast.
Let me give the dates here, Macworld Expo, right? So the show itself runs February 9th through 13th. The exhibits are open February 11th through 13th. Mm-hmm. And on February 11th, which is a Thursday, is the is when we're having our Cirque du Mac party. I'm going to try and off the top of my head remember the sponsors for the party, which are... Ecelerate, Microsoft, Project Wizards, Verbatim, and just a couple of hours ago, we added Smile on my Mac to that list.
Outstanding.
So,
now,
Dave,
I got to ask you, how would I even get I assume you need a ticket to get into this party. You can't just wander in off the street.
That's correct. And
well, usually you can, but normally we'd like you to have a ticket. But, Dave, how can I get more info or maybe, get a ticket or... What's happening with that?
I would say listen to the podcast in about 2 weeks, and we'll have something very special for Mac Geek Gab listeners, and we'll leave it at that. But
excellent.
Keep listening, and you will have an opportunity to get some tickets there for the show.
And I think in general, if you know us and you see us on the floor, we may have a couple of tickets.
Yeah, here's
on
the
us.
Thing though. The show floor opens at noon on the 11th, and the party starts at 8 p.m. So there's not going to be a whole lot of time.
Not
now
a lot of time.
At 12:30 on the 11th, you and I are doing a live podcast on the show floor. So that is a place to find
there's
us.
There's a mob. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll alert them to have extra seating for the people that want tickets to the party.
That's right.
But anyways, anybody who's on the TMO staff, if you know anybody, including myself, Dave, Nancy, Brian, I guess, Jeff.
Yeah.
And probably more, right?
Yeah.
I think that's probably the core group there. There may be some more. Anyways, what else?
We're running along here. No, it's all right. iPhoneAlley.com is Michael Johnston's home. He's the one that converts this to AAC for your interactivity and pleasure. Cashfly.com, CACHEFLY.com provides all the bandwidth to get this podcast from us to you. The podcast marketplace this month includes the A5 and A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, Yojimbo from Barebones Software, PDF Pen from Smile on My Mac, and Notebook from Circus Ponies, all through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. Today is January 11th. Tomorrow is January 12th, Tuesday. If you are listening to this before about 7 p.m. on the 12th and you are in the New Hampshire Seacoast area, come on down to Rye, I think it's Junior High School. Check seacoastmug.org for duress, address and directions, not for duress at all. And I'm speaking there tomorrow night doing my doing a take on my Lean, Clean, and Mean Running Your Mac presentation. We'll
nice.
See how that goes.
We get tongue twisted after a little over an hour. I think that just
it's time to go.
Well, I can't think and talk at the same time.
I know
it's hard. Oh my goodness. It's got to get warmer, Dave.
Oh, and it will. Until then, stay warm, have fun, but don't get caught.
Maynard.